Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. Today, we are going to explore a creative practice that helps us to tune into our voice and to dig deeper into these questions of meaning. I have with me today in studio Sheila Darcy, founder of Sketch Poetics and author of the new book, Sketch by Sketch, A Creative Path to Emotional Freedom. Welcome, Sheila, to the show.
Hi, Kara. I'm so excited. This is going to be an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. You have just released this new book, Sketch by Sketch. It came out in December 2021, so it's relatively new on the market. Let's find the essence. During a difficult time in your life, you basically discovered the act of sketching and freestyle drawing, and what started as a simple sketch soon became the daily practice, and that developed into this meditative therapeutic tool, which then was shared with thousands of people in a movement that you created, Sketch Poetics. Have I condensed that? Maybe you tell us a little bit more about, you really went from sketching or starting to draw, and there is really a movement happening now on the internet and with this book that's coming out, people gathering to sketch and to connect with their innate creativity. So share with us a little bit more about this journey that you've been on.
Thank you so much for recognizing it as a movement, because that's exactly how it feels. It's interesting. In terms of the more divine answer to your question, I feel like there was something in my life that was missing. Mm-hmm. And about 5.5, 6 years ago, I finally listened to that call. And it also coincided with me hitting a wall in every way you can hit a wall, both mentally, emotionally, physically. And I was a businesswoman. I've been in the corporate space for over 20 years. And I was an entrepreneur, and I hit a wall. Mm-hmm. And it was coinciding with my fear of flying, and I finally addressed it and saw a therapist for the first time. I had a lot of stigma around mental health. And in that conversation with the therapist, she described to me what anxiety was, which is what I was experiencing. And she described it in a way that really resonated with me in terms of the connection with my mind, body, and spirit. And she said, anxiety is energy in your body you're not releasing, and that energy is caused by emotions you're not expressing. Mm-hmm. And then she asked me, do you know what those emotions are? And I said, yeah, I think I do. And then she asked me this question that led me to Sketch Poetics. She said, do you have a healthy way to express those emotions? And I immediately remembered how I, as a kid, I used to draw and I would escape it all. And so that's kind of how it, the genesis and the seed that planted Sketch Poetic.
Yeah. Yeah. So you do remember sketching as a kid. When did you stop drawing? When did you stop?
That's the most profound part of my healing journey, is the abandonment of the artist self, that creative self that we talk about a lot. You know, I drew a lot mostly to escape, and I disconnect from my life because I did have a challenging, traumatic childhood. And I think I intuitively knew that drawing was a way for me to disconnect, but also to find a space where I could play and imagine a different life or a different world. And so when I started to sketch again, I did it with a sole intention of reconnecting not only to my creative self, but to do it in a way that allowed me to purge all that was happening inside of me. And mm-hmm. I think that's been the biggest part of my life, is I've been sitting in fear my entire life. You know, I've been afraid of everything. And what I didn't realize is that I was seeking safety in my art, but I didn't know it. I didn't make that connection until I purposefully and intentionally used it to heal.
There is a very poignant passage on voice and healing in your book that I would love to share with our listeners, and with your permission, I would like to read it, a very short paragraph.
Can I would be honored.
Can I do so? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So you write in your book, having grown up with an alcoholic father, my childhood conditioned me to be acutely aware of the sounds in someone's voice, cueing into such nuances as inflection, volume, and tone. I gathered quickly how words were being said with their voice mattered infinitely more than what precise words the person was using. One slurred word, several escalating phrases, a sudden terrifying yell from my father could paralyze my mother and me. Moments later, an apology laced with shame and guilt would fall on deaf ears. Perhaps that is why I could not say anything honestly to myself or to him. I didn't want him to hear the disdain and disrespect in my voice, so I tuned out the voice inside that expressed it. Even more terrifying than the sound of my true thoughts, though, was the sound of nothing, dead silence, the kind of silence that came from me while my parents fought, the kind of silence that came in the dreadful moments after violence has ceased. In those moments, I would hold my breath, lean into the quiet while sitting perfectly still in the darkness of my room, and listen with my whole body for another sound that my mother was alive. The conflict was an unresolvable paradox that left me in perpetual anxiety, and I had to sketch my way back to the source in order to sketch my way through it, and then my way out of it. I found this incredibly touching, because I do not think that you're the only soul on planet Earth who has felt this tension as a child in different situations. It can be an alcoholic father, it can be abuse, it can be mobbing at school, but this kind of, I have to contract and freeze in order to survive, because we know as kids we can't really run away. We don't have the means or the money, you know, the fight, flee, freeze. And we often can't fight. So, especially when we're small. So we kind of retreat back into this inner world. And that is what's so amazing, is that you literally draw inspiration through reconnecting with drawing these lines to get back in touch with your true essence, your true vibration, as we would say, your true vibrationary field, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I believe marks have a resonance. And thank you. First of all, thank you for reading that out loud. I got chilled as you're reading it, because
those are your words.
Way. I know, but it was in the way you read it as well. It was so powerful. But I want to echo what you just said in terms of how it helped me thrive, because what we talk about in that passage is there's a term in psychology called hypervigilance. And it's when you cue into every single thing, whether it's a sound, a body language, movement, you read into the room, and it made me an incredible facilitator. That's exactly the skill that made me who I was and I am in the business world. But what I didn't realize is that the tool that I use to survive my life, right? The reason you become hypervigilant is to protect and to keep yourself safe, because if you can anticipate it, perhaps you can protect yourself. And that's the mindset I constantly, it's what you said, the fight, flight, or freeze. But what I didn't know is if I used the same skill and tool to thrive, and so when I create and when I sketch, I'm cueing into every mark I'm making as if I'm reading a room. Or I'm cueing into every, you know, stroke I'm making as if I'm looking at someone's face. And so I've often said, there's nothing happening on paper that isn't happening in my life. And so what I've done is created a safe container for me to explore all of these heavier feelings, but in a way that makes me feel safe.
You talk about that also in the book, this ability, when we sit down, or I don't want to say this ability, this invitation to allow ourselves to, number one, connect with our breath, number two, body scan, and I guess number three, you talk about starting in silence and that you were actually terrified of sitting in silence. Or that's what I got, that it was much easier for you to have a radio or music or television or, you know, maybe be in a cafe, but to really sit for those few moments and then body scan, okay, what is happening, and then connect that rhythm of the heart with your fingers, with that page. Why is that so important? And not, you know, why is that so important for us? And what would you recommend for other people that feel uncomfortable sitting in silence?
Oh, it's such
tapping, tapping in.
I'm laughing because it's such a common, it's a common issue. It, you know, the deeper the pain, the more universal the truth. And what I've learned in my own journey is that I'm not the only one that's uncomfortable with silence, but the reason we are uncomfortable is different for each person. And my answer was in the passage you just shared. When I grew up in a, you know, a domestic violence household, I was, you know, my mom would send me to my room if she predicted or anticipated violence. But what is unconscious and subconscious to our, to who we are, is in the silence, I wasn't certain whether she was alive. And that could be a triggering comment for some people. But the reality is, when I was sitting on the plane, Cara, and I was afraid of turbulence, unbeknownst to me, my subconscious and unconscious was reliving all of those times when my life felt out of control, where I had no control over any of it, my mortality, my existence, my being. And that was the invitation, is how could I find that inner peace, even when I have no control over the external circumstances in which I'm living? And so my guidance for anyone listening, or for anyone that decides to pick up this book or try daily sketching, because it was the way through for me, is that have compassion and forgiveness for yourself. Because one of the things that that was so, I guess, illuminating for me with emotions is I'm a very expressive, emotive person. And so if you knew me, you would never have thought I had such a wall around and lack of vulnerability around who I was. And that's because I was really good at expressing certain emotions and feeling certain ones, but I was really good at pushing down others. And so that's the thing that I would say to people, is that understand the emotional landscape of who we are. There's no judgment. There's no right or wrong. Every single emotion is here to serve us. And more importantly, our bodies are orchestrating us to flow through that emotion. So I was one of those people that held my breath a lot. And that was how it was showing up. I was a shallow breather. I constantly held my breath, and I had no idea I was doing it all the time until I was I was conscious of my breath.
You work in your workshops and retreat with something called the feeling wheel, which is a tool created by Dr. Gloria Wilcox. And when I looked at this feeling wheel in the book, in the front of the book, that's exactly what we see, is diverse or many different emotions. And it's, again, energy and motion, right? So we tend to judge, shame or anger or even sadness as not being, as being negative, where we tend to judge bliss and joy and gratitude and I don't know what, as, you know, happiness as something to strive for. And so how was that in your practice, or also as you bring this work forward, to realize that we can only heal if we feel whole, meaning if we understand that sadness is as worthy, or shame or guilt or is as worthy as bliss.
Yeah, and that's part of the healing, in my opinion, is the ability to sit in all of the feelings and mm-hmm. not feel judgment around it or even holding on to any single one of those emotions, because every emotion is transient and we tend to hold on to what we perceive as good emotions versus bad. And so the reason the feelings wheel even exists in the book is I didn't have a strong emotional vocabulary. I thought I did, but mm-hmm. I would say mm-hmm. anger, shame, joy, a lot of those words, but there's so many layers to emotions, abandonment, despair, all these incredible, rich descriptions of emotions. And part of the reason I had such a shallow perspective on emotions is the reason I was putting emotions in good and bad categories is my perception of them was based on what I saw expressed. So for example, anger, I only saw negative expressions of anger. Mm-hmm. And so therefore I put it in the negative category. Well, the reason I feel like art heals is not only does it heal the creator who creates it, but as a viewer of that creation, I can see a healthy expression of anger. But, if somebody wants to run and run their anger away or sing their anger away or play a guitar, knit, those are healthy expressions. And I want to teach my child, it's okay to be angry. It's just how you express it. Don't let it come out sideways. And so that's the key to why I think art heals.
Very powerful, very powerful. One last question before we take a break. Many of us, because of these cracked childhoods, and like I said, we can also have great childhoods, but we still realize that there are certain things that have left us a little bit knotted and twisted and in need of some balsam. We've lost our faith. And we've lost our faith in the innocence, in the pureness, in that deep, beautiful, creative flow that we do remember as kids, just taking a crayon and drawing or just dancing when we hear a drum or, we have memory in our cells. How do we restore our faith in the extraordinary? How do we restore that faith in innocence and beauty allowing this natural creativity just to flow from us?
Oh, it's the magic question. I love that you asked that, because the crisis of faith was at the heart of my healing. And mm-hmm. I have found that faith. And it's so interesting that, I feel like part of the reason art heals is the ability to let go to the creative process. So in order for you to sketch or create, you engage with play, imagination, curiosity. And all those three things, if done in the purest sense of when we were children, we never had to think about it, right? We never thought about mm-hmm. how do we play or how are we curious or how do we imagine? We just did it. But as we get older, we create these conditions and structure around it. So that is how sketching can help you get there, because it's the ability to let go. And that is the hardest part. I think having done all the workshops that I've done, that has probably been the biggest pitfall and barrier for most people, is many of us have control issues. Many of us desire for perfection and structure, because in doing so, again, the basic need, it's one of the hierarchy of needs of human beings, is to feel safe. And so we do it for that reason. We don't do it with malintent or bad intentions, but in the construct of constantly trying to keep ourselves safe, we actually do the opposite. We create such a structure that we can't even play anymore. And everything feels like a threat in there. We're in constant fight, flight, or freeze. So I would say using art as a way to let go and to surrender to the process and not get attached to the outcome is the way through.
Beautiful. Sheila, we're going to take a very, very short break and be back with more in a few moments.
Perfect.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I am your host, Kara Johnstad, and with me in studio today is the founder of Sketch Poetics and author of the new book, Sketch by Sketch, A Creative Path to Emotional Freedom, Sheila Darcy. Welcome back.
Thank you.
There's another line. I went through your book, and I'm one of those famous people that do mark things and write in margins, and what I love about books, as much as I love about drawings, what I love about books is that these books get birthed into the world, and then this book is full of drawings and words and wisdom. And I literally can take this book to the kitchen, I can take it on a walk, I can take it to the woods. I mean, it's such an intimate thing, right, to give birth to a book. I think it's really magical how our art and our voice can... connect people like utter strangers, right? And that's what this book did. And there's a line in this book. It also said, where you say, "I revealed the most vulnerable parts of myself without ever feeling exposed." I think that is so precious. I'm going to say it again. I revealed the most vulnerable parts of myself without ever feeling exposed. And I think that ties well into this feeling of how do we create a safe container or rituals to honor that nakedness, that rawness, that beauty of protection while we, it's a little bit like the seed coming out from underneath the earth, right? If the seed comes out too fast into the light, it can feel really, it can have a rough ride if the seed isn't covered and watered and nurtured. So at the same time, when we're so vulnerable, sometimes those inner critics come dancing in to have a tea party. And how did you work with your inner critics that often when we're having one of those naked moments comes in and says, that line was a little bit crooked, or that doesn't work, or looking at your paper's too thin, or why don't you get up and do the wash because you know that this is silly stuff? And how do you deal with your inner critics, or how do you suggest that we deal with them?
That is one of the most common barriers to entry of sketching daily, is that inner critic. And it's one of the reasons I encourage people to use a pen and not a pencil. Because by using a pen, you cannot erase. By using a pen, it's highly likely that you will make a mark you regret or feel critique over. And so for me, I intuitively knew one of my issues was perfectionism and control. I just knew that's mm-hmm. something that I've struggled with my entire life. And unconsciously, I just kind of put it away, packed it in a box, and never really addressed it. So the answer to your question is curiosity. I genuinely feel curiosity cannot sit in the same space as judgment or criticism, because you're mm-hmm. asking questions. You're playing and engaging with that thing that you're critiquing. So as you're making marks, what will happen is all those critics and judges will come, whether that is your own inner critic, or what I'm hearing and seeing in a lot of people that are engaging with Sketch Poetic is there's an audience in mind, right? Whether that's a parent, an art teacher, a spouse, a child, a peer, somebody in your mind is critiquing it. And the question becomes, why does it matter? Why does their opinion hold a higher worth and value than your own? And most of all, going deeper into when did it get to a point where their thoughts and their perspectives matter more than yours? And so part of the thing that we are doing as we sketch daily is to not hold any of it and weight it down with all of these thoughts of shame. So one of the things that happens when you judge is you immediately feel bad about it. You're like, darn it,
yeah.
I really wish I could have let go. Or you start to sketch something and you're judging it already, and then you feel bad for judging it. So we're constantly piling on to the judgment. And what I'm inviting people to do as they're sketching is let those thoughts flow through. And that's the reason it was really helpful for me to do this versus, let's say, yoga and meditation, which I'm now much more comfortable doing because it was too big of a leap for me, Kara. Like, I had a hard time quietening my mind. And I thought that was the expectation. But with sketching, I allow my thoughts to flow through me, my memories, my experiences, my inner voice. And instead of holding on to any of it, I just let it flow through, kind of similar to like a current in the river. And so I think curiosity is really the way through all of it, is be curious about all the things that are coming up and why.
Yeah, I found that fascinating. You said that you tried meditation, journaling, therapy, mm-hmm. everything to cope with anxiety. And I do know people that they're sitting in this meditation class, their monkey mind is almost making them crazy, and they are feeling guilty because they're not managing to be quiet, have a quiet mind, right? And it's just torture. It's just torture.
And I was one of those people.
Yeah. And I thought it was just so refreshing that you talk about this practice. I have it with, of course, with music and sitting at the piano and singing and songwriting. And I said this before we went live. I also just got a sketchbook and my 4 black pens arrived today, and I will be commencing on a Sketch Poetic journey together with a few friends and my sister and all scattered all over the world. I'm very excited, and I thank you for that. And I think that also with meditation, if people would realize that maybe it's sitting in a quiet place to tune into our inner mind or our inner, how do you say, our true voice or our vibration, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be as tough as trying to be silent, right? But drawing helps us very much to deepen our breath and to do the body scans and to let the emotions go and to come to a very meditative place.
Interesting about, let's talk about meditation for mm-hmm. a second, because I have a lot of friends that do transcendental meditation mm-hmm. and they'll tell me what you're doing with sketching is meditation. And I love meditation and I love what it stands for, but I realize mm-hmm. now in reflection why I had such a hard time with it. It actually wasn't just the quieting of the mind. It was required that I sit still.
Yeah.
And that was too big of a leap for somebody that was frenetic, that was not mindful, that was constantly busy and didn't like silence. I mean, talk about 4 things that were going to make meditation really hard for me. And so what ended up happening is when I started sketching daily, I still remember that first week. I was at a coffee shop. I'd quit my last job because, like I said, I hit a wall and I really needed something that had a more well-balanced life. And when I started this new job, I said, I'm going to go to a coffee shop just before I go to work every day. And so I remember using the very things that meditation invites you to do, which is sit still. I did the opposite. I couldn't sit still. So instead, I used that energy to sketch. So if I'm frenetic, I sketch through it. If I was shallow breathing, I sketch through that. If my monkey brain was going all over the place, I sketch through that. So what I was doing, unbeknownst to me, is I was being very compassionate with myself about it all. I was like, I'm recognizing who I am at this particular moment, and it's okay that I am frenetic, lacking in mindfulness, and not being able to sit in silence. And that's what's great about this practice, is it meets you where you are. I'm not asking you to change who you are at this moment. I'm asking you to sit where you are in all the feelings and all the discomfort and sketch through it.
Right. And if we remember how we all were when we arrived, right, on planet Earth, when I look at little kids and with which intensity they can totally relax while drawing. Normally they're singing at the same time. They're walking and making up songs, right? I do have to ask myself sometimes, why are we striving necessarily to sit still on a safu kitchen cushion, right? Why? I mean, there's a place for it. But if you look at the intense curiosity and presence of young children, they're moving and dancing and drawing, and also very present and focused on exactly what they're doing, right? So
and
I don't
you said
know.
It
I,
earlier. I, no, you said it yeah. earlier. I think it's an embodied practice.
It's an embodied practice.
It's not like when you think of singing, you don't think of it as an act of just your vocal cords, just like I don't think of it as my wrist down. I think of it as an embodied practice. I'm engaging every single cell of my body.
Right.
And that's what kids do intuitively. We just condition ourselves to get out of that mode as we get older.
Exactly. You talk about your sketching journey, and that change did not happen overnight, of course. I mean, obviously you started in a cafe, and now it's been 5, 6, who knows how many years of daily sketching and feeling and sensing, and your anxiety, I'm hoping, is gotten more space and is lifted, and you're coming more into peace. Were you surprised how your voice quality and your clarity in conversations maybe changed once things were freeing up?
Oh, I love that this is coming up. Of course, it would come up with you. Voice, I mean, seriously, voice is one of the things that I love talking about in my journey. It's so layered, and I'll just love to touch on a couple of them. One, yes, the quality of my voice has changed. I noticed that I don't talk nearly as fast as I used to. I noticed that my vocal quality is deeper because I'm sitting in my voice much more boldly and much more certain. But then there's the other part of it, and I dedicated my book not only to my mother, my husband, my daughter, but to my grandmother. I called her my nanay, which is mother in Tagalog, which is my Filipino culture. And I observed over the years that she became more and more mute, less and less vocal. And it's because she had suffered so much pain and suffering all of her life that she lost her voice, literally and figuratively. And I dedicate this book to her because in the process of my healing, my voice has become more emboldened because I feel like I speak for my ancestors in many ways. And that is the one thing that will always get me emotional, is that I'm very much recognized that this path that I'm on is divinely guided, not only to help me live a purpose-driven life, but to help me address the narratives and the conditioning that I was raised to believe my life would be like, and the expectations that have been held in my mind of how a Filipino woman that's immigrated to, you know, a Western country, what that looks like. And I'm realizing how much of that conditioning for me, healing and transformation, isn't an evolution to a greater self. It's coming back home to who you've always been. And that's what's been happening. And my voice is becoming more and more settled in all of it.
Yeah. Share with us the link between self-love and creative expression.
Oh, this is a beautiful question. When you can let go to the process and value the process as you do the outcome, what you find is you embrace every part of who you are, the shadow and the light. Every cell of your being is wanting to be seen. And part of the reason the visual practice was healing for me is just the sheer fact that I'm giving it a visual presence outside of my body and giving it permission to be seen is the healing. And so for me, creative expression is the expressing of love, and being in love is just in that sheer act of the process of creating. Because what you're doing in freestyle is part of the process is not attaching yourself to the outcome and audience or anything else. You're doing this for you because you need to do it. It becomes a lifeblood and a connection to something greater than yourself. So one of my mantras, Kara, is when you go inward, a byproduct of going inward is to be this in service of the greater good. You can't unsee it. Once you see it, you want to serve the greater good. And so that's why I don't ever sit on a pulpit or be on a soapbox, and I don't claim to know anything. This is simply a tool, and the tool for you to go inward so that you can find your way to the greater good, whatever that might look like for you.
Yeah, it reminds me just simply how the abundance of our universe, right? The moon is shining because she's shining. The rose is blossoming if somebody walks by and smells her or not. It's just we're here to bring our gifts. And if we can tap into that beauty, then we're going to be all good. Why don't we take a break? Why don't we take a little short break now? And then we'll be back with a longer block where we can dive into some deeper questions.
Love it.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and Brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I am your host, Kara Johnstadt, and with me in studio is founder of Sketch Poetics and author of the new book, Sketch by Sketch, A Creative Path to Emotional Freedom, Sheila Darcy. Sheila, a lot of times when people are starting out on the creative journey, the first thing they're going to share is, I'm not an artist. I'm actually not an artist. I don't draw. I don't sing. I can't write. I don't draw. And I don't know what it's supposed to be good for. So what do you say to the people that intuitively feel drawn, but they have this program in their head, I'm not an artist?
Yeah, that's, I talk a lot about that in the book. And also people that are artists also have their own reasons why this is intimidating to them. It's a simple answer. It's exactly what my book is about. Don't think of it as art or creativity, even though that is the tool. Think of it as expressing your emotions and feeling your emotions. And the moment you can set the foundation around emotions, which is that's where the discomfort lies more than anything. If you were to unpack any reason somebody wants to preempt that statement, there's a reason they're telling you they're not an artist, or there's a reason they're telling you they are an artist. It's because they want you to know, as a workshop participant, that whatever they're going to create, don't judge it. Don't critique it. I'm going to fall. I'm going to fail. They're in essence trying to set your expectations. And I see that there's compassion in that for me. But then if you were to unpack why they need to say that, it's because somewhere in their life, somebody has told them what an artist looks like. And I was one of those people. The reason I, and this is part of the story that really, my story that really, I look back and it pains me, truly pains me, is I neglected my artist self for 20 years. My creativity came out in my business, you know, in the business world in terms of how I thought and how I presented myself. But the actual act of like the artist self, the person that just wants to create for the sake of creating, I buried her 20 years. For 20 years, I mm-hmm. did that. And I did it for the reasons that you're just talking about, the reasons why somebody wouldn't do this book. It's because I have such a reverence for being an artist that I don't see myself worthy of holding that status. So worthiness and value and how we perceive art is often at the crux of all of those things. It's what we think it is. And if you ask a child, again, we talked about this, children don't have this issue. They just know. It's a knowing. It's a being. And that's the part, is we don't know how to be. We have a hard time being, you know, and that's the invitation.
Yeah, it's an invitation to ourselves, and it's also an invitation, I mean, for our own personal practice, but for me, it's also an invitation to honor everybody who's sharing creativity. That means it's an invitation to each other to listen differently, to compliment differently, to help each other heal. So when somebody's wearing that crazy outfit, which they're strutting, you know, happily down the street, and you're like, oh my goodness, I can't imagine. But at the same time, they're so joyous, and to say, hey, that's amazing. Like, that's great, you know? And then to maybe look in our closet and have fun with our own creativity. And I think it's when we empower each other to cook a little bit different, to add more spice, to start a drawing practice, right? To realize it's not only that each person gathers their own courage to be a little bit braver, but that we also have a responsibility. I mean, and now we come to the sketch poetic community. You have built a community, obviously, where people hopefully are able to share a bit and be supported in their bravery and in their curiosity. How does that work?
Yeah, so initially, before the pandemic, I was doing workshops. So once I saw what was happening to me, and I was very curious, if you look at my reading list in my book, I've not kidded, I've either read that those books or at least skimmed them to the point of understanding what was happening to me. So I was very clear that something was shifting, but I didn't know what was happening. So I studied the neuroscience, the mind, body, spirit, all of the psychology, you know, I just wanted to understand it. But so after the workshops and the pandemic hit, I started hosting Zoom sessions, and that's when the community became more global. Initially, before that, it was mostly through my Instagram community. But yeah, so the global community, the awareness that it brought me in the pandemic is what's really interesting that I'm observing today, is that people are telling me, well, Sheila, I've been sitting in all my feelings. I'm tired of it. I don't want to sit with my feelings. But again, if I were to ask them and unpack it further, I'm like, have you really been sitting with your feelings, or are you just sitting in one feeling or two feelings? Because what we're seeing today is people have been in the shadow and in the dark for so long. What I'm observing is the opposite shift. It's like a pendulum shift. They're actually having a harder time sitting in the joy and the happiness. Yeah. And if they do sit in it, they feel like it's going to be fleeting anyway. So why sit there? And so it's just interesting to see our society and our global community shifting one from one spectrum to the other, but feeling the same problems and challenges, which is to feel all of the emotions, not just one or two.
Very well said.
So yeah, that's been the biggest observation that I've been, and I must admit, I go through it myself. Like, I have been sketching for almost 5 years straight, and I will never say I'm healed. It's a healing process, and I still experience anxiety. But the difference is it doesn't debilitate me anymore. It doesn't put me in a constant state of fight, flight, or freeze. Now I'm aware of it and I have to sketch through it. But that's the only difference. I'm human. You know, I'm not promising a silver bullet.
Do you bring a sketchbook with you while you board the plane now?
I do. I sketch through. I do. Oh my gosh. Some of my favorite sketches are the ones where the turbulence hits and I'm like sketching my way through it. One of my favorite memories, Kara, is I actually had a whole row of people on a plane doing it with me. It was my favorite memory. wireless was down and they were bored out of their minds. And I said, why don't you sketch with me?
What does somebody need to start to embark on this practice? I mean, they can go buy the book. They can also check you out at Instagram and your homepage. But what would you say is the most important thing? You said a pen, not a pencil, right? So a black pen. And then, I mean, as songwriters, we use, how do you say, those coasters that go under beer?
Or napkins.
We're famous for writing lyrics on napkins. Yeah, exactly. Do you sense that in the beginning it's good just to have a piece of paper so that it's not too fancy? Because when we buy this expensive journal, we might actually get too nervous about making a mark in it, that maybe it's good to start with some napkins or some normal paper?
Yeah, 100% spot on. In fact, when I was talking to my publisher about my book, I negotiated having 40 pages that were blank in the book. You know, obviously that costs more. But I did that because I didn't want you to have a blank piece of paper to find one. It's there, so there's no excuse, one. But the other thing of what you just said is so important. I love that you brought that up, is we often, again, set expectations and put ourselves in a position where it becomes a sacred practice before it is even sacred. So you going to an art store and buying the most expensive supplies, what you've done is you've just put it so much expectation of yourself of creating something that's worthy of those supplies. So I often tell people, when I first started, I used an office pen because I didn't know this was going to happen. Any of this was going to happen. I just thought I was doodling and releasing emotions. I didn't know it was going to transform in the way it did. So I just used it. I remember using a Bic pen and a sketchbook that one of those cheap office supplies I got at Staples. Now it's I have much more richer and more expensive materials, but I didn't start off that way. And that's because I didn't see it in the way that I see it today. So I invite everyone to start where I did. Go basic, go simple. Don't give yourself any reason to give you any more pressure than you already have on yourself. We all do it.
And do you have any amount of minutes people start with, or should they just grab it in between everything, or should we sit down and have a safe moment and a ritualistic moment?
Yeah, I talk about that in the book. So the good news is, even if you don't have the book, the process is really simple. I do encourage you to do 10 minutes to begin. That's anyone can do 10 minutes. You can do it in between babies and naps or during your break at work. There's no reason. 10 minutes. 10 minutes is enough to tap into it. So 10 minutes, working your way up to 30. And then the three steps, Kara, is really simple. One is a body scan. It's the very first thing I do. And the second is I ask myself, how am I feeling? And depending on that, it's either I know how I'm feeling, I don't know how I'm feeling, or I'm feeling a lot. And then the third is to release it. And that part, I actually have a few brain hacks that I'm happy to share with your audience. But when I think about answering those questions, the important part is not attaching to any of it. So when I do my body scan, I'm just doing a data cataloging of how I'm feeling. Do I have a headache? Is my jaw tight? Is my lower back sore? I'm just capturing information. And the reason that's important is it's just inspiration. You're not intended to do anything with it. And I think that's been part of my healing journey as well, is because I've been so performance oriented, my natural state is to fix it. Instead, what I do is I just catalog and gather data, but not do anything with it other than just let it be.
Yeah, you're sensing it instead of analyzing.
Yeah, bringing the subconscious and unconscious to the conscious field. That when somebody asks me, how is it healing? The healing is the awareness. The healing is the consciousness of it. That's all you have to do, is just be aware. The moment you're aware of it, you cannot see it. It's there. Now, what you do with that information is up to you, but it's really just being more conscious. Being a more conscious person.
And I always love thinking of, well, we have named it the subconscious. That's a label we've given it, but it could also be called, right? And it always puts it somehow lower than, I don't know what, for me, instead of the imaginal or the sensual.
Yeah. I love that.
Let's feel into our sensualness, mm-hmm. or into our imaginal, or into our rivered oceanic self, or, you know, it gets this idea of sub as if it's in the basement somewhere, instead of saying let's feel into these different nooks and crannies and be explorers, mm-hmm. of this amazing miracle that we are, which is phenomenal. What is the longer term vision of Sketch Poetic? Do you have anything?
I have a huge vision. Okay. Thanks for asking.
Share.
Yeah, so there's a few huge visions I have. I put them in three pillars. The very first pillar is, I hope that my book or this practice can be introduced in the education system.
Yes.
And the reason being is emotional IQ and feeling and processing and, you know, just ruminating and contemplating is a skill as human beings we should all be better at, right? Just being able to sit and process. So that's one huge vision I have. The second vision is, I'm a advocate of all creative expression, all mental, mm-hmm. health practices. And what I hope is, and this is something that I've done, is one, I've created a platform with the help of an agency called Swirl, and I invested in my own platform called theemotionplatform.com. So if you go on a website and type in emotionplatform.com, I wanted to create a warm, inviting place for anybody that sketches, all the readers that are reading my book, to upload their sketch, tag it with the emotions they were expressing, and then that's it. There's no likes. There's no, you know, affirmations and validation. You're just sharing it with the world because you believe in the power of it. And then as a viewer of that platform, I can search, I'm feeling despair at this moment. And every sketch from around the world that's ever been tagged despair will come up, giving you as a viewer this feeling of you're not alone, but also the power of those marks coming at you. I really believe in the healing nature of that. So my goal of that platform, it leads me to my third pillar, is imagine you're a viewer of that platform and you're in Atlanta and you typed in despair. What I hope in the future is, it says, hi, Sheila, we noticed you searched for despair. Did you know there's a breathwork class on Saturday in your area? Or did you know there's a telehealth therapist that's willing to meet with you this week? So my bigger vision is to unite our healing collective, people that do healing arts, people that do all of this, and bridge them to the people, to meet them where they're at, and doing it through this platform. So I don't know how that's going to come up or how it's going to happen. I just know and believe in it. But that is it. Those are the three pillars.
Beautiful. Let our sketches give voice to our bigger collective story. I must have sensed your vision. Let our sketches give voice to our bigger collective story. As we close our time together, Sheila, what is a golden nugget of wisdom that you've learned by having this daily practice that you'd like to leave us with?
What's intuitively coming up for me, Kara, is that emotions are complex. And in doing so, we tend to overthink what emotions are. And there's a difference between feeling and expressing emotions for other people. So, for example, I'm really good at being sad for other people. But the moment that sadness was for me, I couldn't do it. And so what I'm inviting all of us to feel is, understand, have compassion for yourself, have grace to sit in all of it. And it is messy, it is rooted, it is hard. But if we can do it in a safe container of creativity, which balances out the heaviness of those emotions, you'll find that it will give you that space that you've been looking for and seeking your entire life. And again, it could be anything from singing to dancing, to all of it. If my book is a gateway or a catalyst to that, I feel like my job is done, because I'm not possessive of the tool. I am simply, mm-hmm. putting it out there that creativity and art heals.
Yeah, yeah. I thank you, Sheila Darcy, for being with us today at Voice Rising. We wish you much success with the book, but yeah, that humbleness actually for all of us to remember we are all creators, and it's the graciousness with which you share your path and your journey with the world is inspiring. And I thank you, and I wish you much success. And
thank
all
you
of
so
us.
Much. I appreciate it. My heart is bursting. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Let's all go pick up a pen.
Let's and dance I'll, through it.
And dance and dance and sketch. Sketch Same. Dancing. Sketch yep. singing. This is yep. it. All right. Be blessed. Bye-bye.
Thank you.